So tonight I'm going to read a koan from the Mumon Khan. I thought before I read it, I would just tell you a little bit about where I was the past week. I was gone for about 10 days, and I went on, this is the very first time I've ever even slept on a boat, but I went on an 8-day, what they call liveaboard boat that went into the Mexican waters of the Baja, called the Sea of Cortez. And this was a diving boat. So it was quite an interesting trip. There were kind of two aspects that I found interesting. One was just the sheer beauty of the place that we were all at. There were actually 18 divers, very experienced divers, on the boat. I probably had the least experience of everybody, and I've done somewhat over 100 dives. It was just amazingly beautiful. Vast waters and islands that were like mountains coming right up out of the water. So there was no like land gradually to the mountain, but just these stark, burnt mountains. Sometimes there were cactuses around the base of them. And dolphins following the boat, jumping out of the water, whale sharks, sea lions, all kinds of life. And at night, because it was a new moon, and because we were miles from anywhere, these islands were uninhabited. This was deep down into the Sea of Cortez. Really, I think the only way you could get there would be on an overnight boat like this. And at night, when you looked up at the sky, the Milky Way was just like cream. The stars were brilliant. It was just quite, at times, overwhelming. So the other thing I found interesting were my boatmates. I guess it started the first night around the dinner table when one of the organizers, he actually was a dive master, went around the room and had everybody say their name and then say what they expected to see during the week, what they expected to see in terms of diving or whatever it might be, what experience they expected to have. So everybody was saying, oh, I hope I see lots of nudibranchs, and I hope I get to swim with the sea lion, et cetera, et cetera. It came around to me. And in all honesty, I said, I have no expectations because I've never done this before. I've never been here before. I don't know what to expect. So whatever happens, I'll just enjoy it the way it is. That was my first indicator of something. So during this marvelous trip, several times during the trip, I was approached by various boatmates and asked a similar question, the essence of which was, is this trip meeting the expectations you had for it? Is this trip everything you hoped it would be? And it's funny, I would be taken aback by the question, and then I would always answer the same way. I didn't hope it to be any way. I didn't know what it was going to be like. So it neither matches nor doesn't match the hopes that I didn't have. And then the conversation would be over, which was to my great relief. Now, the other thing is that in the midst of this incredible beauty, it was very, very common that people would be talking about their past, trips they took before, what they saw, things they did. It was pretty superficial and almost incessant, so oftentimes I would retreat back to my little tiny cabin and just do zazen. And I also had the opportunity, because I had it on my smartphone, it was already stored on my smartphone, because you were completely away from any cell towers. So there was no internet, no telephone, no conversation, no contact with the so-called outside world. So I took the opportunity to read some Zen texts that I had in my phone. And one of them that I read was actually the Platform Sutra, which is a a story. It's actually an autobiographical story and a set of teachings by the sixth patriarch, Wei Nung. So this is called the Platform Sutra, and he tells the story of his very early life. For example, he grew up dirt poor in the south of China. His father died when he was very young, and his mother and him were in profound poverty. And he, as he became a teenager, was around the age of 13, he would go and sell firewood in order to bring a little bit of money back so that his mother would have some money for food and whatever. Very, very simple lifestyle. And one day, while he was gathering firewood, and not really knowing what this was, there was a man wearing these robes. They were Buddhist robes. He was evidently a Buddhist monk. And he was reciting some words. And the words that Wei Nung, at this young, tender age of 13, as a dirt poor teenager, heard were the following. Allow mind, having no fixed abode, to flow forth. And at that moment he became awakened. He had an enlightenment experience. No prior training. This happens. He was kind of a Zen prodigy. Perhaps in past lifetimes he did profound practice. Perhaps he was just that way. Sometimes a word, a phrase, an event would strike us, often without any preparation, any of us here in this room, and strike us in a way that just opens up our mind in a very profound way. He went up to this monk. He was illiterate, by the way, and he said to the monk, "What are you reading?" He said, "This is the Diamond Sutra. It's a text that we use in our Chan practice." And he found out about Chan and that there was this teacher, Hongren, who was actually the fifth Zen patriarch in the north of China. And he spent, after he got his mother all settled and got permission, he decided to go and find this master. Maybe it was a couple of years later when he was a little bit older. And he took a very arduous 30-day journey through the forest and roads and with great difficulties and arrived at this monastery and he was viewed poorly by everybody else there because he was from the south and that was the poor part of China and he was considered kind of an aborigine. That's how it was described in the Platform Sutra. I was viewed as an aborigine. And as it occurred, the master very early on detected something very special about Wei Nung, but set him to work in the kitchen pounding rice. And then one day there was a contest. The Master Hongren, the fifth patriarch, set up this contest. He wanted to pass on the robe and bowl because he knew that 3 years later he had this presentiment of his death. He was going to die in 3 years. He wanted to make sure that the robe and bowl, which had been passed on through the succession of patriarchs from Bodhidharma on to him, finally as the fifth patriarch, he felt there was one more passage and that would be the end. So he decided to have a contest. He already knew who was going to get the robe and bowl, but he was very, very worried that this individual would actually be harmed or perhaps even killed by folks in and around this monastery, perhaps members of this Chan group who would never, never accept the what they would view as a travesty of this robe and bowl, this treasured symbol of Chan truth passed on to an aborigine. So he said, "I would like everyone to think about a poem or a set of stanzas that they might write. Write them here on the wall with some chalk, and I will, I will judge these. And whoever I feel has met the deep understanding of all my teaching these many years, to that person I will pass on the robe and bowl." So nobody tried, because everybody knew that this head monk, Shen Shui, was going to be the successor. Everybody presumed this. He was the head monk for many years. He was a wonderful human being. He had done hard practice. He seemed to exemplify many of the characteristics of a Zen Chan person. It was called Chan in China. So Shen Shui wrote his stanza, and he felt very insecure about this with great trepidation. He was just hoping. He didn't want to present it to the teacher. He wrote it on the wall and did it anonymously, just in case it was rejected, nobody would know it was his. And he was the only one to write this stanza. So he wrote, "The body is a Bodhi tree, the mind a bright mirror. Always take pains to wipe them carefully, and do not allow any dust to alight." And this was his poem. The next day, when the other many, many monks saw this stanza, they were amazed. "Oh, this must be Shen Shui. Oh, we're certain that he's going to get the robe." No one else even dared put a poem up there. I guess nobody felt they had the level of insight required. But Wei Nun asked someone in the kitchen at night. He said, "Can you come and read me this poem?" He was illiterate, remember. And the poem was read to him. "The body is a Bodhi tree, the mind a mirror bright. Take pains to clean them daily, and let no dust alight." And when Wei Nun heard the poem, he knew right away that this person did not have it, so to speak. So he asked this co-worker from the kitchen to write down these words on the wall underneath this poem. And the words were as follows. "There is no Bodhi tree. There is no mirror standing bright. Because from the very beginning, not a single thing has ever existed. Where can dust alight?" These words were written that night. The next morning, the monks got up again and they saw another poem and they read this. "There is no Bodhi tree. There is no mirror bright. Because from the very beginning, not a single thing has ever existed. Where can dust alight?" And they knew that this was the statement of the truth. They knew intuitively. So did Master Hungren. But now he had to be very, very careful. He took the Wei Nun aside one day, and this was at night as well. He says, "We cannot allow anyone to see us," but there was a transmission. He confirmed Wei Nun's enlightenment, gave him the robe and bowl, and sent him on his way that night. He says, "You must, I'll take you down to the river." He personally walked into the river and said, "You must leave here. Get away as fast as you can, because when they find out tomorrow morning that I gave you the robe and bowl, people will be chasing after you." So that's where this koan starts. I'm going to read you this. So this is case number 23 from the Mumankan. And the title of it is "Think Neither Good Nor Evil." And I'd like to say at the outset that this koan is remarkable. This koan encapsulates the essence of our practice. So let me read this. So this is the case, and it's a little bit long. It's a story. The sixth patriarch, which is now Wei Nun, was pursued by Monk Myo. So Monk Myo was a former general, and he was one of the monks in this monastery. And when he found out that Wei Nun had taken off to the south of China, he was going to hunt him down and get the robe and bowl back, even if he had to kill him to get it. This is how important it was to him. This was a travesty. The patriarch, seeing Myo coming, this is after a long chase. You can imagine a big chase scene in a major Hollywood movie. It was like that. Cars crashing and things diving off of bridges, etc., running through the forest, and Monk Myo coming and hearing his breathing. And finally, Wei Nun, seeing him coming, laid the robe and bowl on a rock and said, to Myo. The robe and bowls symbolize the faith. Are they to be fought for? I allow you to take them away. Myo tried to lift them, but they were as immovable as a mountain. He could not pick them up. Hesitating and trembling, Myo said, I have come for the Dharma, not for the robe. I beg you to teach your servant. What a change of heart. The sixth patriarch said, when you were pursuing me and were not thinking of good or evil, but only of obtaining the treasure, where was your original self? It says here, another translation is, right now, think neither good nor evil. And there was a long pause. Think neither good nor evil. Long pause. And then he said, when you were chasing after me through the forest doggedly to get the robe and bowl, where was your original face? It's another translation of this, or original aspect. Where was your, and it's capital O, capital F, where was your original face? At this, Myo was all at once enlightened. His whole body was dripping with sweat. With tears flowing, he made obeisance and asked, besides the secret words and meanings, is there anything else deeper still? The patriarch said, what I have just told you is not secret. You have realized your true self, and what is secret is in you yourself. Myo said, when I was at Obai, that was the name of this fifth patriarch, together with the other monks, I did not awaken to my true self, thanks to your instruction, which is to the point. I am like one who has drunk water and actually experienced himself, whether it is cold or warm. This came from another koan, remember the koan Mu, in the commentary. I was like someone, I'm like someone drinking water, I know from myself whether it's hot or cold. The patriarch said, we both have Obai for our teacher, hold fast to what you've learned from him. The humility there, not to take credit for what had just happened. So what does this mean? Why is this the crux of this practice that we are doing? Think neither good nor evil. What is this human condition? What is it? Think about my boatmates, and me as well, many times. Did this meet all your expectations you had? What are you hoping to find? Oh boy, you know, the water wasn't very clear, and I was hoping to see a lot of fish, and I just didn't see anything. Already the mind is off and running. There's something happening, and the mind immediately is passing judgment upon it. It meets my expectations. It didn't meet my expectations. It was good. It wasn't so good. I liked it. I didn't like it. It compared to this trip I did before, but this trip was better, and this thing was better. Already the mind now is floating above the actual experience of the world. So if you think about it, you know, let's use diving as a wonderful analogy. When you dive, you wear something called a buoyancy compensator. It's a jacket that enables you to either sink or float. It has an air bladder, and it's fed off the tank that you're also breathing from. Now, when you put this jacket on, you have to weight it. You have to put lead weights in these pockets, or you will not be able to go down. You will float on the surface and you'll be kicking and you won't be able to go down. Why? Because there's air in your BC, there's air in your wetsuit, you're wearing neoprene, you're buoyant. You have what is called positive buoyancy. So the only way to begin to go down is to have weight already in your BC. And then you have to let the air out of your BC or you won't go down, even with the weight, until you get the signal. Dive master gives a thumbs down, start diving. You take your inflator and you hit the deflate button. You hear air rushing out, and you start to sink down below the surface of water. Down, down, down. 1 foot, 10 foot, 20 foot, 30 foot, 50 foot. Gradually down, equalizing the pressure in your ears. So what is this? What is the air? The air are these judgments, good and evil. I wish someone didn't say that to me. Oh, I'm such a failure. All these things, the constant commentary, some of it judgmental and some of it discursive, doesn't go anywhere, doesn't mean anything, but constantly about the world that we are experiencing directly, preventing us from, like air in our BC, going below the surface because we want to go down deep. The weight in our BC is our practice. We have learned this practice called Zazen. It's waiting there for us. It's loaded. We know the posture. We know what we do with our mind. We know the concentration. We know the jodaki, the focus. This is what starts to bring us down. We let the air out. We start to let go of. We think neither of good nor evil. We intentionally let go of these ideas. We hold fast to the practice. The practice is this weight. And the air we let out. We let go of all these judgments, all these comparisons. Let them go. Go deeper and deeper and deeper. As we start to sink way down deep, at the surface there were lots of things to see. There was still light filtering through. At the deep, deep section, it's very quiet. It's very dark. We're surrounded by something. We don't see it. We don't know what it is. Then all of a sudden we realize that what we're surrounded by, what we went down to find, was there at the surface too. We just didn't see it. We didn't know it. We were distracted by the fish and the coral and all the rest of it. So you can see how this analogy goes. Okay. So this thinking neither good nor evil, this is the critical, critical step in our practice. This is what the six patriarchs said to Monk Myo. The first thing is thinking neither good nor evil. Do not make stories in your mind of your experience. Let that go. Put that down. There's all sorts of ways to do it. One of the ways is this focus on this one point. Another is to understand that when you experience anything, it is absolute. It happened because it had to be exactly that way. We begin to get it that there's no point in judging it in this practice. I'm not saying out in the world where we live a virtual life, world of maps and comparisons, and we have to do that. So we need to do this. We need to come in direct contact with our experience. So first he said, thinking neither good nor evil, letting go of these thoughts, developing this dispassion. There's this level of your actual sensory experience. Above it is the floating into thoughts, judgments, ideas. This practice brings us down to this actual experience. What does he say here? He says to Monk Myo, when you were pursuing me, when you were pursuing me. Now this Monk Myo, when he was pursuing the sixth patriarch, was one-pointed. I have to get that robe and bowl. This is the intensity of our practice. This is the absorption in our actual experience. And during our everyday life, the wholeheartedness that we bring to everything we do. So that we put aside good and evil, judgments about things. We enter our life totally, our whole mind and body. This is what our practice here in the cushion is training us to do. This is a training. We're learning how to do that on the cushion. So that when we re-enter the life where you're being asked, do you like it, do you not like it? Is this right, is this wrong? Should it be that way or shouldn't it be that way? You know better deep inside. You know better. You don't have to believe it. You can engage in that kind of behavior, but you don't believe it. You know what the real world is, the actual world. Now, we don't stop there. What stops there, it's interesting. When I was a teenager, I became very, very interested in existentialism. it seemed to me like an antidote to all the bullshit, which is kind of like the questions, you know, did it meet your expectations, and this is important, and you have to become this, you have to be famous, you have to make lots of money. And existentialism says, life is absurd. There is essentially no meaning to it. There's no ultimate right, wrong, good, bad. It's a very profound insight, but it stops there. Did the six patriarchs stop there? Did he just say, don't think of good or evil? No. This is the key point to this koan. He asked one further question. He said, when you were pursuing me, what was your original face? Monk Mio probably had never heard this before. My original face. Existentialism doesn't know about this. It just sees this world of happenings that are absurd. It's wonderful. We got down to this level here. We let go of all the crap floating on top. Now we're down to the actual absurd, moment-by-moment flowing experience, peeled off the meanings. Now we're just there with it, that dispassionate level. But we must go further, deeper, further. What is it? What is it shining? What is it emanating? This is the critical, critical thing. This is why I said this koan is such a perfect description of the essence of our practice. What is my original face? What is shining from this? What is this thing I'm diving down to find? What is it? It's there in everything. It's there in things that I call good. It's in things I call bad. It's in times when I'm ill. It's in times when I'm healthy. It's times when I'm happy. It's times when I'm anxious. It's always shining, always emanating. What is that? What is my original face? What is the original substance dissolved like the salt and water, the binder and paint? This is the key thing. And remember, he said, when you were pursuing me, when you were one-pointed, when there was no division between you and what was your, what we might call now your activity. At that time, there was no division. There was no me. There was no you. There was no pursuing. There was just this, total, 100%. This is why when this Monk Mio went to pick up the robe and bowl and couldn't pick it up, he was ready. He had let it all go. He was like the sixth patriarch when he was collecting firewood and heard the monk say, allow mind having no fixed abode to flow forth. He was ready. What is this mind that flows forth from everything? From everything. What is this water that is everywhere? You're in it, you're diving it, you're swallowing it, it's surrounding you. It's no matter where you go, it's everywhere. What is this? What is this I am? I am. This is what we must enter. We can't get into that when we're floating above, thinking good and evil, making plans for the future, comparing our experience to something that happened before, making judgments about everything around us and ourselves as well. We cannot see this. It's there, but we can't see it. The minute we put it down, we re-enter our actual experience. We wholeheartedly enter it. Then it is everywhere, shining from everything. This is the key. This is the key. So there's a commentary and a verse. And I'll read those. So the commentary by Mumon is as follows. Of the sixth patriarch, it has to be said that in an emergency he did something extraordinary. He has a grand motherly kindness. It is as if he peeled a fresh lychee, removed its seed, and then put it in your mouth so that you need only swallow it. He was pointing directly. Your original, before you made up any ideas, any notions, developed any attachments, made any associations, with characteristics that you think you are, things you believe you are, the sense of standing apart, the sense of having these strengths, these weaknesses. Before all that, what was your original, birthless, deathless face? Face. This is peeling the lichen up for Monk Myo. Then the verse goes like this. So this is a description of this original face, a poetic description. You describe it in vain. You picture it to no avail. You can never praise it fully. Stop all your groping and maneuvering. There is nowhere to hide your true self. When the universe is annihilated, it remains indestructible. So we'll end there today.